Hello Shemai, and thank you all for listening to my podcast Beyond the Senedd. And thanks to those of you who've given me ideas and themes for future podcasts as well. It's really useful to hear what you're interested in. Not every one that I do is going to be rosy and perfect, but that's why I like to trial new things to see what works, what topics you're interested in, what you want to hear more from me and what you don't. So please let me know. Somebody messaged me on Instagram to say she'd like to find out about my experience of being a woman in politics. So that's what I'm here to talk to you about today. But I just want to caveat it by saying this is going to be my experience, and it's not going to be a cut and paste job of whatever every woman has experienced. It'll be my personal, my own travels. Some of it will be good, some of it will have been challenging, and so just take it in that manner. And the second thing is I simply won't be able to cover all of the matters or all of the issues in one episode, and so I'm sure I will return to it in the future, and I want to. So if you are a woman trying to get involved in politics, you want my advice, you want to know what I feel or how I can help you, then please do get in touch. I'm not too scary. So the first thing I'd like to say is, if you've listened to some of the other episodes, I've not gone into party politics to be in a career or, you know, to be getting a title. I did lots of campaigns before I was elected, be it the campaign against top-up fees in Wales when I was student president of Aberystwyth University, campaigning against the Iraq War at that particular time, and I still campaign on peace issues here in Wales, and campaigning on environmental issues. I've chaired Wales Against Open Cast Mining, and I've done lots of work on that. So when I started to embrace the idea of party politics and standing for election, it was based on me wanting to try and use the campaigning that I'd done in these protest groups as a way in which I could influence change in a democratically elected way. I wanted to test how we could raise some of those issues higher up the political agenda, issues and matters that were just not being heard or being ignored, or were just not high enough up the political agenda, because you just didn't have politicians like me and others there at the time, for whatever reason. So it wasn't really an attempt to go, right, you know, at the age of 25, I will be a politician. I wasn't a William Hague. I didn't crave it. I didn't dream about it. I didn't think, you know, I want to be the First Minister of Wales or any of this. I purely, and I still do, genuinely just want to help people. I want to change things. And I want to try and use my profile to make sure that we can talk about some of the more thorny or some of the more, you know, some of the more radical things that we need to be talking about here in Wales. And, you know, some things I've been really successful in doing, and others I still have to work hard at. But that's how I kind of saw my entry into politics and how I still see it. And I think many people have criticised me for this term, oh, student politics, you know, because I'd come from the student movement. But I'd like to say to anybody who's still in that view, mostly conservative politicians, I have had that attack from, I must say, is, you know, student politics give me a wealth of experience of learning to campaign, of putting my views on a leaflet, of talking to students about why I wanted to become the president of their union, for example. I was a trustee of the students' union. That's no mean feat. That's quite a big responsibility. I had to look at how successful the coffee shop was doing and the events at the students' union and think about how we could increase revenue. So it wasn't just about protesting and holding a placard. It was a wider experience than that. And working with people of all ages as well, the managers and the people who lived and worked in the Aberystwyth area. So you may use the term student politics in a negative way, but I genuinely believe that that helped shape me who I am today, and I will thank everybody who helped me along the way as well. And the other thing that really gets me is the age thing and the fact that I didn't have enough experience in their view. Well, of course, you know, I apologise that I wasn't, 50 when I was elected, that I was 25 and I didn't have a life experience in that broader sense. But I've always used the analogy of there may be a 50-year-old politician who's had 2 years' experience and stands and wins. And I was a 25-year-old politician who was elected but had about 7, 8, 9 years experience of campaigning on various issues. So experience and background is all relative when you're talking about how you view the world and what you've done to try and change it. So I think the age thing is a bit of a red herring. And also, of course you wouldn't have a whole parliament full of 25-year-olds, because you do want variants of opinions, you want different people from different walks of life, but you do want some young people there, because you can have a different type of conversation, you can bring different topics to the table that might not otherwise have ever been there. So, you know, those are two things I wanted to cover right from the start. And the other thing I wanted to expand on was, I think that it's really difficult not to talk about my experience without talking about positive action. In Plaid Cymru, we had a policy whereby on the regional list, which is 20 of us are elected via a proportional representation system on the regional list, we had women number one on the list, and if a woman was number one, then a man was number two. So this always had to happen under that system, and it was in 2007. The system has now changed to, if a woman is at the top of the list, then a man is second, and if a man is top of the list, then a woman will have to be second. And I've won top of the list under both systems, and some will say, well, look, you can win it more on merit, so this justifies that you don't need this type of system. But I don't agree with that. I think had there not been the system that was in place when I was elected, then I wouldn't be here today, and neither would probably people like Leanne Wood, and she's a former leader. Because we wouldn't have had the same backing, we wouldn't have had the same experience, we wouldn't have known so many people. And I think, therefore, not only for women, we need more positive action when it comes to BME communities, when it comes to disability as well. Because merit alone and mentoring and putting yourself out there is only going to go so far. So it's us and Labour that have some form of positive action at the moment, but other parties, again, they all just say, well, if you're a woman and you're good enough, you'll get there. They may think that, but I beg to disagree. But I think the issue with me was that many of the men, well, and women in the party at the time didn't like the system, and I became an embodiment of that system, and I feel that many people took their frustrations and their anger out on me through that. It was unfortunate, it wasn't a very pleasant birth into the political system, but it happened. But in a weird way, it made me stronger, because I didn't arrive and get a very good welcoming. My results had been leaked to the press, so even though you were top of the list, somebody leaked it to show that the male behind me had actually gained more votes than me. But that was by the by, because we had the system whereby the woman was at the top of the list. But they were trying to do it, to release it to the press, to spin this idea that this system didn't work, that I shouldn't be where I was, blah, 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 blah. So I didn't have a very nice start. But actually, I'd like to say thank you to the people who leaked that, and thank you to the people who made my life a bit difficult at the beginning, because it's made me stronger, and it's made me actually be able to deal with very difficult situations better. Because I think if I'd have been one of those young politicians that everybody said, oh, she's going to be a rising star, or she's going to be amazing, then, you know, it might have been just, I might have got too big for my boots, I might have become too egotistical, and I might not have felt that I could have done so many things that were challenging and put myself out there. Maybe, I don't know, that's the experience that I lived, and so that's what I had to deal with straight away. Obviously, there were many people who were welcoming and engaging, but ultimately, I was thrown in at the deep end, and you don't know that you have to deal with staffing structures, administrative work, at the same time as dealing with casework. And this was at a time when I had no, you know, I hadn't got the staffing structures in place at the beginning of my career. And then there was the first experience of the Western Mail photographer. And of course, I was at that time the youngest female. I think it was only Jonathan Morgan, who was not an assembly anymore, assembly member anymore, who had been younger than me, who was elected at that time. And the Western Mail photographer wanted to do a picture of me on the merry-go-round. I don't know if you remember the merry-go-round that's there in the Cardiff Bay area every summer. And said, oh, I just want to do a nice picture of you for the Western Mail, of you sitting on this merry-go-round. And I was like, whoa, now this is just warning signals going up. And nobody advised me, nobody said anything to me. Nobody told me what to do or what not to do, but in my mind, in my gut, I knew it was wrong. I said, no, I said, I'm an elected politician, I might be young, but I'm not going to be sitting on a merry-go-round, because I had these visions in my head of the headline, you know, something like Child's Play or, you know, some corny caption about me being young. So I said, no, I want a professional picture in the Senedd, standing behind a seat. And to be fair, the picture was amazing. But it was only because I insisted on it being like that it happened in that way. And so I was really proud of myself in that moment for realising where they wanted to go with this particular issue. And so after that, all I've ever done is think in headlines. So whenever something happens, I think, what would the headline be behind this? And, you know, well, I have to caveat that with not every time something's happened. So, you know, I haven't done it every time, otherwise I wouldn't have had some of the headlines I've had. But anyway, I digress. But try to think about how that headline would look and how I could try and at least control some of the things that I was involved with. I think what was difficult for me in getting elected at that time was there wasn't that much of a structure in the National Assembly as an institution to support new members. There wasn't the same thing that they have now, where they give you a lot of information, they give you somebody to follow you and to give you advice. They really put a very strong system in place now, whereas when I was there in 2007, that just didn't exist. And while some female politicians would have given me tidbits of advice and support, people like Leanne and Helen Mary Jones, it wasn't structured or anything. And I don't blame them, but there was nothing in the party that could give you that sort of moral backbone if you were needing to have that support. And I think that's where probably sometimes I've fallen down, that I haven't made some decisions that I'm entirely happy with. But, you know, I think lots of different bodies and lots of different organisations have learnt the hard way from that. Somebody asked me on Instagram again to say about how I thought myself as a role model. I have a battle with this sometimes, because I even though publicly I'm really quite confident, I can speak well, I can engage with people, I think, I am not that confident in myself, and I always self-doubt myself. I always question myself, I always self-analyse, I'm very, very self-critical. So, you know, the worst troll can say something about me on social media, but that doesn't matter, because I've already thought about some of those things, or I've already put those seeds of negativity in my brain. So I find being a role model quite difficult to grasp, because I often don't see myself in that way. My husband, Rahil, he says very different to me. He says, look, you've got to know that you've got this profile, that you've got this following, and you've got people who are inspired by you. But quite often I don't see it that way. And so I find the role modelling thing quite hard. And perhaps sometimes that's why I haven't felt that I can mentor a different woman or someone coming through politics, because I don't see myself in that really strong, confident way. And I think that's just going to be a lifelong thing. I can't just miraculously think that I'm this amazing person that has been a politician since 2007, that I've done X, Y, and Z, and that will then mean that I'll be somebody's role model. I think I've had a lot of self-doubt over the years, to the extent that I feel that, you know, if somebody else was doing it, perhaps they would be a better role model. I don't know. I'm sorry that's not the most amazing, well-structured way of putting it. I would like to think that I can go into schools and that I can talk to young women and everybody about politics and how to inspire them. But I have to keep telling myself that I can do these things and I can help others, and that there are ways in which I can bring people with me when sometimes I don't naturally feel that way. I was also asked about work-life balance, and I was told that I've mastered that now. Thank you. I think I probably have mastered it better now. When I was first elected, and, you know, I think all politicians are the same when they're first elected, you need to build a profile, you need to get to know different organisations, you need to really understand certain structures, you want to feed your mind with so many different pieces of information that you go everywhere and you be everywhere and you say yes to everything. And now sometimes I will be more strategic and I won't say yes to everything. I speak on higher education for the party, so of course I'll want to be saying yes to everything in that regard. Locally, if there are campaigns or public meetings, I like to be able to say yes and to be able to go, unless that's on an evening when I'm in the assembly and I can't physically get there. But I met a lady who was doing a PhD piece of research a few years ago, and it really stayed with me. She said to me, well, I'm a woman in an academic institution and I don't have any children, so people expect me to be able to do the things on a weekend that they can't do because they have children. And I think that's how I felt a lot, actually, in politics. As a young woman with obviously a husband now but no family, is that if there's a weekend event or if there's an evening event, people seem to be annoyed if you don't turn up to everything. And I have to sit back and say to people sometimes, well, you know, no, I don't have children, but I do have other interests that I would like to be able to pursue. For example, I like running, or at one stage I was going to an orchestra quite often on a Monday evening, so I could not go to a Monday evening meeting. But if I went to that meeting and didn't go to the orchestra, then I would never have that creative experience in my life. So I think it has, of course there's maternal discrimination, of course women who have children face awful experiences, but don't underestimate the fact that you are expected to do much, much more if you're somebody who people perceive as not having other commitments, and I've faced the brunt of that on many occasions. But I think I've worked the work-life balance more so now that I can manage things better. The other issue I think is important to deal with is general perceptions of young women by other people. I mean, it's a bit of a controversial subject because I think there are people, even in my own party, who sometimes can be patronising, can be belittling, can mansplain you, and they maybe probably don't even know that they're doing it. But I get it a lot, and I got it more when I was younger because of, obviously, I looked young. So you turn up at events, a breakfast meeting full of men, and people just would ignore you and they wouldn't speak to you because they'd all be talking to other men. You'd go to a public meeting and the leader of the council would be mansplaining you about structures of the council and what they meant. I still get such letters, very, very patronising responses to genuine issues that people write to me about, which I don't think that men would get. And also sometimes party members or people, the public in general, talking at you or to you in a way that they just genuinely would not speak to a male politician. I think the level of respect sometimes for female politicians is so low, and it's got worse, that it's very hard to counter that. And it's pretty tragic sometimes that you have to get a man to counter it. So if there are misogynistic attacks on social media, for example, sometimes we actually have the discussion, well, let's get a man to counter it because they'll take it better or because they'll listen. And I'm pretty sick of it now. I think that's why I've responded to some of the abuse lately on social media myself, whereas I wouldn't have done so otherwise in the past, because I'm sick of having to put up with people talking to us like that, and I don't see that we should have to. And we don't get an apology for it either. People think it's just acceptable to compare you with a male politician and what you should or should not be doing because they are doing it, but not looking at what you do and how good you often perform your work and the campaigns you've won. And so this really frustrates me, and I think the whole perception of women in politics and the abuse thing and the way we are treated are intertwined. And we are still, I'm afraid, in a very male-dominated society. I won't say much more today because I don't think I should go on and on forever, but the thing I want to leave you with is it was really interesting when I was first elected. I was on the petitions committee. I was on there for quite some time. But I was on there with two quite strong male politicians who were, I think, both leaders of their parties at the time. And I'd never been on a committee structure before. Speaking in a speech in the Senate was fine. I could do that. But sitting on a committee, reading the papers, analysing them, and then speaking or questioning people just really, really scared me. And they were so when I went to the petitions committee on the occasions that I was on it at the beginning, I would be saying nothing at all because I was in between these two male politicians and I had no voice. I had no way of cutting through to the chair to really ensure that my voice was heard. And so, to be fair to the officials at the time, they said to me, and I spoke to them and I said, I'm just finding this really difficult, I don't know what to do, I'm never going to be on record as saying anything at this rate. And so they said, right, we'll have a look at this and we'll see if we can change the seating arrangement. And so the next time I came in, I was sitting, so the chair is there and I was sitting on the side, but the closest to the chair, so I wasn't in between these men. And it changed everything. I was able to then engage. The chair could see me clearly because the men were leaning over and shouting and gesticulating all the time. And I felt much more comfortable. And this one small change made me realise that we can be doing this all the time. So that when I'm chairing a committee, I want to try and feel that, you know, the people who are not shouting, the people who don't have as big an ego as the others, will be able to contribute. A small thing, but I think it affects women much more so. And I think the final thing to talk about today, I said the last thing was final, but I'm on a roll now, is just about how you can build allegiances with other women to support one another. I don't think I've entirely mastered it ever, and I think some women are not so good at supporting one another for whatever reason, but I think I'm finally in a place where I've been, perhaps because I've had experience and I've been there quite a long time now in the Senate, where I can build specific allegiances with different women across political divides on various issues, and I think that's really good, and I think that's really positive to see. In relation to supporting one another mentally, I still think we have gaps. I still think that there could be not a formal cross-party group as such, but a cross-party group of women that may meet to perhaps chat about some of the things that affect them detrimentally or things that they would want support on. And I think that's something perhaps I can talk to others about establishing before at the end of this assembly term. Because sometimes we just want to rant or we just want to get it off our chest and find a safe space to do that. So, women need to support one another, but how we do that is key. So those were the issues I think I would want to tackle today. But I think there are other things to come back to in relation to how topics are raised, different topics are raised by women in politics and how they're perceived, our experiences with the media and so forth. I've still yet to talk about, so plenty of other things, and I will never tire of talking about women in politics. I think it's really important and really interesting. So thanks for listening, and give me your feedback.